Maloni, Talohani, Talofalava, Malole Soifu, Malelangi Mama, Kia Orana, Maloelelei, Fakalofa Lahiatu, Talofa, Kokumele Mele Puka, Mel, Mai Teama, and Momo Lava Pikia Petitato Tamana Italangi Motana Tauhinga, Manahaka Manuyanga, Mugitato Uma. Mateola Matemaloi Kumawe Gitato, Kokatino in Tato Tamahina Bene. Yeah. Once again, warm Pacific greetings to all our listeners. You are tuned in and listening to Te Ama Radio on Planet FM 104.6 or live streaming online at www.planetaudio.org.nz. Or if you missed the broadcast, listen for the next 7 days at www.planetaudio.org.nz/Te Ama Pacifica Health. Alo, Talofalava. Welcome to another weekly Te Ama Pacific Health Tala Tala Noa, our community radio show podcast dedicated to Pacific Health. Yes, we 100% acknowledge all the workers in the health sector here in Aotearoa, from the volunteers, frontline workers, right up to our leaders at the round table where the decisions are made for us. Well, another beautiful, rainy, cold Tuesday. Well, I hope you're all having a good day. Today, we are very blessed to have a very, very special guest with us, joining us right here, Mr. Porsala Tautua. Again, who works as an alcohol, drugs and gambling clinician. Sala is a registered social worker. But more importantly, Sala is a loving and proud family man. A devout Christian, very strong in his faith. Also, Sala and myself, we also have a common passion for fishing and also a strong interest in sports. Malo Sala, how are you? Thank you for being here.
Malo se fua, langi ma, lausunga mele. Yeah, fatalo fatu. And warm Pacific greetings to those listening. Paftai.
My man, thank you. Thank you, Sala. I really appreciate you coming on the show, you know.
Thank you.
Sala, you know, the way I like to approach this, this Tala Tala Noa is to get our listeners and myself to have a better, fair understanding of who you are as a person. So if it's okay with you, can you share with us, you know, a bit about yourself, your family growing up? Is that okay?
That's awesome. Not a problem. Faftai Mele, yeah, great question. I 37 years old. To some, particularly to my children, they call me a dinosaur. To some, they're still very young. I was born in Samoa, the great land of Samoa.
Yes.
Migrated to New Zealand with family and siblings at the age of 3. And so basically raised in New Zealand, in particular in the south of Auckland.
South side. Sala, can I jump in there?
Yeah.
Do you have any memories from that young age, being in Samoa at the age of 3?
Fortunately, I do, yes. Just looking out the window this today, I see some rain and it definitely brings me a memory of playing in the floods, heavy rainfall in Samoa as a little child. Me and my sister playing with the leaves,
yes,
and pretending there were little boats in a big ocean of the sea, just playing in the weather there. I remember riding in a bus with my dad, eating. I forgot what it's called. It's they're like little tiny red shells, like peanuts. Yeah. I enjoyed that Yeah, not too many memories, but yep.
And which village were you born in?
I was born in Mototua Hospital. That's in the main island of Apia. Yes. Raised in Faliasiu, so that's my dad's mother's side.
Yes.
Dad's side is Salilonga, and mom's from Alipaka.
Nice. Mm. Okay. And carry on, Sala, when you guys moved here at the age of 3.
Yep.
Correct, yep.
So raised in South Auckland, particularly further south in Papakura. So at heart, I'm Papakura hard.
Yes.
Attended all school in Papakura, Cosgrove Primary, Intermediate, now called Mansell, and Papakura High School. So,
how was it for you, at primary school and intermediate, how was it for you attending?
I think, reflecting back, I was considered a good boy. Never got into trouble. I actually enjoyed going to school. Primary school was a little closer. However, intermediate and high school was a further distance to walk due to, the financial struggles, as most families were in when they moved from the islands. But great memories. I enjoyed those younger school days.
That's right. I can relate to you moving over from the islands at a young age. It's it is a big struggle, eh?
Yep.
I remember... Sorry, one of my memories at high school, my mum bought me these nice shoes, really nice shoes, and I didn't know any different. And went to my PE class, and all these kids were started talking about the brands and the Jordans they got, and they're, what kind of shoes you got? I don't know, my mum bought it from the Avondale market. Okay, Sala, and share with us a bit about your experience at high school.
Mm.
And also sports, if you were involved in sports at school.
Yep, so typical island, that seems to be the part that we excel in.
Yes.
Apart from eating my lunch. But if I can share, before I jump on the sports, you shared about the fancy shoes you had. You triggered a very challenging time of my life back in primary days. Because we were financially struggling, I remember... my mother sewing clothes, and I thought they were so cool until I arrived at school with my paired top and with my bottom shorts. And when the kids started calling me names and teasing me, saying that
painful, man.
Why I haven't changed out of my pajamas, I then realized, oh my gosh, that's just next level. So... yeah, that's definitely one of those memories growing up, struggling in the family recently moved over. Anyway, with the sports, thoroughly enjoyed sports. Wouldn't call myself an athlete, but I definitely enjoyed sports. So I think my first love was in primary, which was soccer.
Yes.
I loved it so much, I wanted to play rep, and I had the opportunity to play for Drury. Unfortunately, it fell on Sundays. So typical Sabbath day rules in the family, didn't go that way. I think intermediate, I started to fall in love with basketball.
Yes.
Played for the school intermediate, Papakura Intermediate. We did actually well. We took out the county's comp out in the Papakura YMCA there with all the schools.
Nice.
And then from there on, I just enjoyed playing basketball from then on to high school, even to this day. I don't play it as much, but I still get myself as much involved a lot with basketball.
Still have a lot of love for the game,
Still have a lot of love for the game. Played rep, counties under 16. Some may remember John R4. He was a close teammate of mine, former All Black, but he loves the game of basketball also. He's actually very good at basketball. Played Selosi Tangiaki Bao, who played for Manu Samoa for several years as the winger.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Is he half Fijian?
He's half Fijian and half Samoan.
He's another baller.
He's a baller. He was my extreme dunker guy, so I'll throw the ball up anywhere and he'll come out of the blue and dunk it. We did very well in Papakura High School. We played in the prems for basketball. I think we come fourth in school days, playing in the premiership for basketball. And then also played for Auckland under-21s, along with a close friend. Those who know basketball know Lindsay Tate. So he was point guard one, and I was absolutely point guard B. I was B for a long time, actually, subbing in for the great Lindsay Tate. So that's my basketball career, a very short-lived basketball career, until I then decided to go offshore for other commitments.
That's amazing. So, I mean, representing Auckland 21s in b-ball or any sport, that's quite a big achievement. A lot of time and effort goes into to practice, and it's amazing, Salah. And then, okay, so suddenly you stop playing b-ball and you headed overseas.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of sports I was involved in. I also enjoyed rugby.
Yeah.
The challenge was, back in high school, we were only allowed to choose one sport. And a lot of my friends, they enjoyed rugby, of course. One of the names of Jerome Kano, he decided to take that path. We all made it to counties together. However, that fell on Sunday with the trials. And that was, looking back, it wasn't a barrier. I saw it as a blessing, I guess, until John Arfour and Jerome Kano decided to accept the scholarship to St. Kent's. We made it to Roland Mills together and played a couple of years. Also played basketball as an adult for the Northern Region Champs, and took a couple of tournaments out in Taupo back in the day, so I really enjoyed that. But like I said, at the age of 21, I decided to choose the path of a more spiritual nourishment.
Yes.
I felt my calling was to serve the people of the Philippines.
Yes.
And so I was called to serve a 2-year, 24 months full-time mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints,
yes,
a.k.a. Mormons, within Cebu, one of the major islands in Philippines, 2004 to 2006.
And you were there for a good 2 years.
For a good 2 years. Well, I spent the first part of the mission in Utah, Salt Lake City, just learning the basics of the missionary work, learning the basics of the language, the alphabet,
yes,
etc., and then finish off the 24 months in the Philippines.
So how was it for you leading up to spending that time in the Philippines? What were some of the challenges? Obviously, the language barrier, but also when you got to the Philippines, what were some of the challenges that you faced?
Yeah, I guess culture-wise, it wasn't so much of a challenge. I said to myself in the first week, this is probably be the closest I'll ever get to Samoa. Unfortunately, I haven't been back to Samoa since arriving in New Zealand at the age of 3. After seeing all the palm trees and the hot weather, the humidity, the brown faces, and the fluency of the culture there, I actually enjoyed it. So in that regards, not much of a barrier or challenge. It was more of the missionary work, teaching the people a gospel that's unfamiliar to them, and at times was a bit strange to them. So that was more of the challenge.
So what they could understand English? Well, how did you communicate with them in terms of the language barriers?
Definitely the language would have been a barrier. Took me probably about 7-8 months to really speak to them in a language or be able to convert.
In the Philippines language, for you to speak?
In the Cebuano language, yes, which is one of the dialects, yep. And that was the gospel vocabs, conversational talk that we had, teaching them about the Bible and the church.
Yes.
About Christ. So the language was definitely at first a barrier until I became fluent. I would say a year into the mission, became fluent.
What did it take for you to get to that stage to become fluent? What were you doing to learn?
Yeah, reading a lot, speaking all the time, my companion at first, my first companion, who was my partner, missionary colleague. He was American from California. He was very fluent. And so even though we knew English very well,
yes,
although different accents,
right,
we would speak the Filipino language 24/7 just to help me develop the language very, very quickly.
Okay, so he was already fluent before you guys paired up. Okay, yep. So that helped it as well.
So he was my trainer.
Yes.
Yep. And then obviously the tougher part was to speak the very limited language amongst the natives. And the tough part about that is until you see them laughing, mocking, yes, you just had to take it and appreciate that hopefully they would help and correct.
You know, it shows me and tells me that you were fully committed and prepared to put up with that, because it is a very humbling or embarrassing even to put yourself through that, and you came through out the other end fluent in the language.
Massive lessons. Before, I was the typical young person who used to mock my parents, couldn't speak English, calling them a fob, and there I was in an unfamiliar country, speaking a language I didn't know, and at the same time I could see myself as a fob as I used to mock my parents. And so massive life experience once I returned home. Every time I heard somebody struggling in the English language,
you had that appreciation.
I had that increase of love for them.
My man, I'm super impressed that you managed to perfect. So what's the dialect again?
So it's Bisaya. That's the original, but they've now modernized it. They called it Cebuano. So the island is called Cebu.
Man. And share with us some of the your spiritual for me, us as islanders, for myself. Mm. We're all raised up to love God. We're all raised up in the church.
Mm.
But in your case, I want to know your experience being in a foreign country and sharing with them in their language. How was it for you from a spiritual perspective, Salah?
Yeah, great question. I truly blessed to be serving amongst the Filipino people, because I saw them very similar to our Pacific people. Their characteristics, their personalities, very hospitable. So much they, despite the third world country that they're classified as,
yes,
the amount of poverty, the slumps they have there in the country, they were always giving. It was always about giving and serving. So that was one of the bigger lessons, spiritual-wise. It was always about serving. And they don't have a limitation to serving, despite the limited resources or financial means that they had.
Salah. And also, you mentioned the slums, and I am not familiar with the Philippines. The level of poverty that you experienced over there, have you seen that here in NZ?
Another part, a life-changing experience, was witnessing firsthand what poverty actually looks like. Before the mission, I took life for granted, being in New Zealand, thinking, you know, this is poverty. I actually thought my family moving into New Zealand, we were poor. Until arriving in the Philippines and seeing the state of those people there, I then reflected and thought to myself, actually, we're doing really well in New Zealand. Yeah. New Zealand has everything, and I took it for granted. And I now understood what my parents used to say to me, if you were in Samoa, you'll be doing this, you'll be doing that. And so that was another life-changing experience, seeing the challenges those people had to go through day in, day out. And, yes, very unfortunate. We're blessed to be in New Zealand, Aotearoa, great country.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Salah. Okay, I'm just going to try and keep moving along. When you came back home from your two-year mission in the Philippines, what did you get up to when you came back here?
Yep. So in the church, after you completed a 2-year full-time mission, the next mission, or the more important mission, is then to find a full-time companion, or in other words, eternal companion, which is to be married. And so I thought my plans was, and before I could get married, I need a good career so I could provide. Unfortunately, at that time, I didn't have the greatest academics back in high school. I dropped out at end of sixth form with no qualifications. Did some warehouse work. And so after my mission, I thought, okay, I need to go back to get a qualification in order for me to get a good career. Yes. And then maybe a beautiful young woman would take me on board. And so that was my plans. I did a finished my diploma in sports and rec at MIT. However, the occupation I had as a gym instructor at the time, personal trainer, couldn't provide me enough hours. So I had to go back to my old warehouse job at Griffin's.
Yes.
Fortunately, at that time, I was dating a young woman, and she was kind enough to say yes. We got married, and a couple of years later, that whispering and that prompting from the Spirit told me I had to go complete a degree. And so I carried on my studies again.
How old will you have been? And would you mid-20s around that time, or late 20s? Or?
Yeah, so I returned at the age of 23 back in New Zealand. I got married in 2009 at the age of 26. So I discovered that, or realized that I definitely still needed a career in something, that the warehouse occupation wasn't going to do it at that time. And the good Lord helped to open my eyes that I needed qualification, I needed to get into a better career, provide for the family.
Yes.
And so by the age of 30, I then decided to start a degree in social work, back at MIT as well. So I completed that 3 years later. By then, we had our third child.
Amazing. Mm. I can imagine the responsibilities and the challenges you had at, you know, having a young family at that time, and the commitment you made to go back to studies.
Mm-hmm.
Sala, what led you to study in that field? Sorry, and what were you, that degree you studied in?
Social work?
Yes. Yep. What led you to get into that field?
That's a funny question. So at the early time of being married, 2009, I was also called as a bishop at the age of 26. So it was very challenging.
What's a bishop?
As a bishop.
Yeah. What is a bishop?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Bishop is basically a lay minister role in the church. Possibly the equivalent of a pastor.
Okay. Looking after the church.
Looking after the church, a congregation.
Yes.
The membership at that time was about 400 people. And it was a big responsibility amongst the Samoan people. So this was a Samoan-speaking congregation.
Yes.
We call it wards, that I had to look after. And just starting a family, a year later into our marriage, we had our first child, and so it was very challenging. So much on our plate. But we strongly believed, my wife and I, that the Lord would always provide, despite the challenges. Back to the question. A brother, a good brother, approached me and asked me whether I should consider social work. The first question I said was, what is social work?
Yes.
I had no idea what it was. But his persistence led me to sign up. I prayed about it, and I thought, okay, maybe this brother has a good reason for me to consider this. So, yeah, that led me to attend it. So it was just because of a good brother elbowing me consistently.
Man, it's a blessing to have good people around you, they help play a good part in your journey. And my man, you make it sound easy. You completed the 3 years. You know, there's a lot of that happens within those 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, responsibilities. What did you get up to when you graduated?
What did I get up to? Well, the first thing that came to mind was to now stop the study life and now to need to get into some kind of career to provide financially for the family, for the children. And especially at that time, for the 3 years where I was full-time studying, I actually stopped working. Only in the holidays I did. Yes. However, it was a massive way for me to give back to my wife, who was supporting us.
Yes.
She was the sole income earner at that time. And so I was really looking forward to assisting my wife at that time, and wanted to really spoil her somehow, and the children.
What a blessing your wife has been, mm-hmm. and how you guys have juggled your married life and the young kids all along, eh?
Yep.
Nice. So, okay, you linked up with Waitemata District Health Board?
Yeah, I was blessed in my final year of studies, my social work degree, I was blessed to do my placement.
Placement, yes.
With Tupu Services. At first, I had no idea who Tupu Services were. Yes. They did a short presentation at our class.
At MIT.
Yes. And so I was the only one that decided to do my placement there. Fortunately, another colleague, classmate of mine, joined me. So we did our placement there, and unfortunately, there was no vacancies at that time.
Yes.
However, after studies, I was blessed again, approached by a good friend who I randomly met during my study days, who contacted me and asked that there was a vacancy for me to apply at Strive Community Trust.
Strive, yes. Send them out and about. Mm,
great organization, Strive. Really enjoyed my time there. Great leadership, great colleagues. Yes. So, yeah, I dived into a youth mentor there, my first position there. And then not too long after, Strive took on housing contracts for transitional housing. So I became a social worker there in the transitional housing department.
How was that experience for you?
That was another eye-opener also. Just I didn't realize how much or how many families did not have a roof over their head in the country of New Zealand. Very unexpected.
During that particular time, Salah, if I can ask, was that when the government was putting people into motels in there? Was that around the same time?
That's right, yes. So that was back in 2017, 2018. Yeah. Yep, that's when all the contracts were brought out by the government.
So that definitely made you realize how many families out there that don't have a roof over their
heads. Yeah, or if they did, they were all squashed up in one tiny house. And unfortunately, that's a common scene by our Pacific people, all squashed up in one house because houses were unaffordable.
Yeah. And, you know, coming from you, that carries a lot of weight because you saw it firsthand. Mm-hmm. You know, you helped those people. And how long were you there at Strive for in that role?
Yeah, I wasn't there for too long. I then was blessed again. So many blessings throughout my life. I unbelievable amount of blessings. I got a random call from a good friend, a good brother by the name of Dwayne, and mentioned there was a vacancy going on at Tupu Service, and if I wanted to apply. And no thought, yes, straight away. Took that blessing with two hands and blessed to be accepted by the leadership there to work for Tupu Service. So that was in 2018.
Okay. Mm. And can you share with us the role and the work you guys do at Tupu Service?
Yep.
Please.
Sure. Thank you. So Tupu Service, we're a Pacific Alcohol and Drugs and Gambling Service under Waitemata DHB or District Health Board. Mm. Our umbrella, immediate umbrella is Tikanga Whoi, which is under WDHB. So we're a regional team.
Right.
I'm based in Ngauruhoe. We cover the county's Manukau side. And our team, Tupu Service, there's 14 of us.
Yes. College, clinicians.
So we're alcohol and drugs and gambling clinicians. Yep.
Yeah.
So for our Pacific people, right across the Auckland region. Yep.
So you've been there since 2018 now. Shucks, how's the workload? What is it like working with these people that have addictions?
Mm.
What, from your lenses?
Yeah, it's it can be very challenging in the sense where we have our Pacific people who come through wanting the supports, but at a very high risk due to their use being dependents,
yes.
Which also contributes to suicide. Those who also are diagnosed with mental health,
yes.
are considered our
high priority
clients. Yep.
So it's like a dual diagnosis?
Dual diagnosis that we work with, yes. Yep.
And, you know, from my experience, it's such a hard line of work you guys are in. You know, some of these people that I've seen or experienced, not only are they addicted, and you mentioned the extreme end, suicide, which we wouldn't wish on anyone, but the damage they're doing to themselves and their home, you know, I mean, for you guys as clinicians, I guess you guys are trained, you know, to deal with that. But how do you guys deal with all that pressure and all that stress?
Yeah, that's a great question. And something, unfortunately, that clinicians do get burnt out. Yeah. And so it's a high encouragement where we do take care of ourselves. Self-care is very important as part of our professional side of things. And so one of those self-cares,
yes.
is, for me personally, I love fishing, as you mentioned, brother.
Yes.
I'm recently trying to get back into some running around because, unfortunately, fishing doesn't provide the extra sweat that I'm wanting. just sore muscles and sore back from pulling in the fish.
Very true, yes.
But that's one of the self-cares or a couple of the self-cares that I try to do consistently to provide that mental stability working with these high-risk clients.
And I've got a mate, he works, my best friend actually, from Rewa, proud Southsider. He works at Barnardo's. So he's at work one whole week and then home the following weekend. You know, we're quite close, and his release is fishing, you know, to just totally get away from those responsibilities. Sorry, Salah, and also you have another role as a youth team coordinator, is that correct?
Yep.
Can you share with us that part of your role?
Yep. That's definitely one of the other hats that I wear, and that's basically just coordinating the youth work that we do amongst the six of us. So there's six of us clinicians who our portfolio is working with the young ones. That's ages 13 to 24. 24 being our Pacific age of youth, possibly 54 also at times. It's basically me networking with other services or other agencies or other individuals that may have youth under their care that require that extra support from us as alcohol and drugs clinicians. Yep.
That's amazing. And also you guys provide a service for different ethnicities, who may not be able to speak English properly.
So being a Pacific service, we proud ourselves on a few of our clinicians speak some of the various languages: Samoan, Tongan,
yes.
Niuean, Cook Island,
yes.
I think Tokelau as well. That's some of our main languages that we speak. So we cover one-on-one counselling. Those who want one-on-one counselling, we do provide that.
Yes.
We provide group counselling as well. So as you know, our Pacific people like to talanoa and share amongst others, and that's during daytime as well, as well as our groups only, for after hours.
Okay, Salah, and also, as I mentioned to you, we've been really fortunate here at our tiny team here at Dauma. We been blessed to have received some funding from the Mental Health Foundation to promote, educate, and raise awareness around like minds like mine. You know, it's a national program to prevent stigma and discrimination, but also provide social inclusion for those that have experienced mental health difficulties, you know, and it's an area or concept that I'm proud to be have involved with over the years, you know, because it's something that that I've been through, you know, and but for you, Salah, being in the position you have been, not just with work, but also in the church, you know, you have that personal engagement with a group of people, with a lot of people, even on an individual basis. What are your thoughts or perspectives on how can we better engage those with struggles of mental health?
Wow, that's a great question. It's unfortunate that there is a stigma, and I have to say and agree there definitely is a stigma for those with mental health in general, let alone the various specific diagnoses of those mental health. It's definitely going to take some time. However, in the specific way of Talanoa, I see it as a very important aspect or even a model to practice, all beginning within our families. I feel that if our families are able to incorporate and continue the Talanoa process from parents to children, children to parents, grandparents, all the relatives, and then hopefully increasing that circle out to friends, into churches,
sports groups,
yes,
into the communities, and
yes,
just further.
Yep, man. And then hopefully that stigma will eventually decrease and feel more love.
Salah, very wise words, man. I think you'll be a tremendous advocate for like minds like mine. You know, you deal with it every day. You know, you see it, and that's my heart of heart thinking as well. It all starts in the family.
Yeah, I've recently had an experience with my younger brother, who we didn't know for many years had depression. Yes. He was diagnosed with depression, and we always wondered why he was a bit different.
Yes.
He had his good times, almost bipolar. And then he finally mentioned to us, and that's just another example of us just opening up, and this is just amongst us siblings. And then eventually got to our parents, who were very receptive of how my brother was. And so, yeah, fortunately our family were able to be very supportive till now, and we just talk and a bit more acceptive of his situation.
What a blessing, though. What a huge blessing your brother was able to reach out within his circle, his family. That's really encouraging to hear. Salah, we're almost there. Time's just Salah, is there anything else you would like to share with the new Tupu program?
Yes.
Would you like to elaborate a bit more on that?
Yes, please. Thank you, brother. So Neil Tupu is our youth program. It's basically a workshop where we educate our young ones in a very fun, interactive way. As we know that our young people are short attention span, and education sometimes can be very daunting. And so in a specific way, we deliver these workshops called Neil Tupu. And so wherever our young people are, if any listeners out there who know of any young people, even adults, Pacific people that do need the help, and if I may say, we also provide support not only for the individuals that are using the substance, yes, but also those who are affected,
yes,
by those individuals. So whether it be family members, yeah, mother and father, sibling,
kids,
children, yeah, friends,
yes,
whoever feels that they are impacted in some way or other, please contact us for that support. We do support those who are affected through our one-on-one sessions or groups as well. So yeah, feel free to contact us.
Absolutely.
Yep,
yes.
Feel free to contact us. Our contact number is our Duty Counselor line, open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. Yes. to 4:30 p.m. 09 0985 1810. That's 0985 1810. That's a free line as well. You can email us, tupuservice@waitamatadhb.govt.nz.
My man, thank you, Sala, for providing that very vital information for, mm-hmm. you know, for anyone out there that will need that help. Sala, you know, I'm very happy and blessed to have heard your story, you know, and also the part the church played in your direction, you know, and the plan for you to get to this point where you are. And I think it's a huge blessing having that involvement because I think a lot of us, you know, I hate to generalize, but kind of have no plan after school, you know, have a family and can't back it up. And then that can lead to serious problems, you know, and struggles. Sala, what do you see in the near future, or what are your hopes for yourself moving forward, I guess, in that professional space?
Just continue doing what we're doing at the moment, just hoping to branch out. South Auckland, most are aware of, I would say 95% are aware of Tupu Service and what we do. Unfortunately, amongst the North Shore or the other part of the region, Auckland region, West Auckland, Central, not so much. And so if I could push notice, encouragement to all our Pacific or even non-Pacific, we still won't close any doors to those who don't seem or don't classify themselves as Pacific people. We still are willing to accept and support those who want the support. And so please get in touch with us. We're always willing to support. So basically the plan is just to really get ourselves out there and really have our people, have the community know that we're there to support. We're not going to close the doors on anybody that want the support. And,
Amen. Put it all out there, the services you guys provide. So the hope is everyone is aware of it and utilize those services, too.
Yep. Unfortunately, the services, there are alcohol and drugs services out there. Unfortunately, our Pacific people who struggle with the language, for example, or even the culture, struggle to head towards mainstream services. And so it's our hope that our people, Pacific people, understand there is a service and a cultural appropriate way that can assist that barrier.
Nice. Breaking down those challenges, for those certain families. Sala, I want to ask your thoughts as a clinician. You know, the election's coming up, and I'm not too caught up in that, but this issue around the weed, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm guessing you're talking about the cannabis referendum. Unfortunately, that's a great question. Unfortunately, as a DHB employee, I'm not able to comment on any of my personal opinions. I'll save that after you click off, knock off today. However, if I can clarify a misconception out there, especially amongst our Pacifica people, is that this referendum is not for medicinal use. This referendum is solely for the recreational use.
Huge difference.
Medicinal use is actually legal at the moment. It's, you can actually get approval. Approvals by the GP or doctors who are approved to do such. That's a big misconception, and people are thinking it's part of the medicinal use as well, but it's not. It's only for recreational use. If that helps.
And you don't have to be in the know to understand what recreation use can lead to. Sala, Once again, I want to thank you. Any final thoughts, Salah, before we close up?
Thank you, brother. Yes, I do. I remember a little talk we just had before jumping on, and I totally agree with you 100% that in order to support somebody or even showing love to somebody, whether they be family or not, you don't need to be qualified. You don't need to go to a degree to show that love to anybody. My encouragement is if you can, put your arm around them, give a little warm hug, tell them, give a little ear, have a little listen, show them that love. And I remember Johnny, Mr. Elvis, last time I was here, he gave a great encouragement is to never be alone, especially when you're going through the hard times. There's always somebody out there, and hopefully we'll always be that somebody to lend a helping hand by listening.
Amen. Absolutely. Thank you, Salah. And also, I'd love to have you come back on again.
Thank you, brother.
You know, that's what this platform's all about, for the likes of yourselves and many other of our workers in the health force, you know, grinding towards the greater good, and for our family. So I really want to thank you for being
here.
Thank
you, brother. Appreciate it.
And I really appreciate you, Salah, and I'm going to give it to you one more time to finish us off with the final word, and that's us.
Well, just wanted to express my appreciation to you, my brother Mele, for having me, and just on behalf of my leadership with Tukanga Foy, Niteni, and Dwayne, on behalf of Dwayne as well, apologies for all those Lakers fans, but really appreciate this time on here today. May God bless. Bhavtai.
God bless you, Salah, and thank you so much again. Really appreciate you and the work you're doing. Whawhetai te lea lava. Thank you.
Red.